Well, Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Two times in a row.
It's a two for one.
It's a two for one weekend. Yeah. So we were blessed, I think, with a wonderful Passover service and a good Passover yesterday. Today, of course, is the first day of unleavened bread, or second day of unleavened bread. This is also the Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread. What does that mean?
Wave sheaf offering countdown.
And yeah, the countdown to Pentecost counts from today, as well as the wave sheaf offering will be tomorrow. Yeah, the day after the Sabbath during the feast of unleavened bread. So we will have a high holy day, Sabbath on Thursday, the last day of unleavened bread. And today I was thinking through most of the week, actually until yesterday, that today was discussion week, but it's really not, because it's just the 31st, so it's pretty close to the 1st, but anyway, we'll have discussion week next week, and Chrislyn, is that set? Services next Sabbath will be at the Moomaw's at 1 o'clock, so they're going to take an opportunity to host next week. Thursday we'll have services here at our normal time. So it's kind of interesting that as we've been going through our series, our red letter series, that we find ourselves yesterday I was thinking about, okay, well now I got to come up with a message for today. And then I went and looked to see where we were in the red letter series, and I'm like, well, we're in John 14, and Yeshua is giving a message to the disciples on Passover during the Feast of Unleavened Bread.
Perfect.
So here we are. I'm like, I don't need to speak at all. I'm just gonna we're just gonna let Yeshua completely have the floor here this morning. What I would like to do, though, is if you have pen and paper or your cell phone or whatever you want to use, I'd really like for you to, as we go through this, not just be thinking about your questions, but thinking about you know, how anything here like impacts you or triggers something in your spirit that says, you know, I need to change this. I need to do better in this area. You know, confession is, as they say, good for the soul, right? And you're in a safe place. So any of those kind of things that come to mind, jot them down. I'd like for everybody, man, I don't know why my nose is, you never have that where your nose just starts itching, you can't get it to quit. I think maybe it's because of my healing where I banged it. But I'd like for everybody to have at least a couple, so that when we get done reading through this, we'll be able to have a lot to talk about. This section of John 14, 15, and 16. John 17, I read to you on Passover, during the Passover service. That's the prayer that Yeshua prayed for the disciples right at the end. So actually, we've already covered 13, and he began in chapter 13 to give this, if you want to call it a sermon, if you want to, his last words, basically, to his disciples, his last instruction to them. And that carries through 13, 14, 15, and 16. And again, 17 was the prayer that he prayed. That whole chapter is that prayer. So I don't know how far we want to go. I'm going to take a little poll here as we go along. I'll have a few comments as we go, but I'm going to try to keep them somewhat to a minimum, okay? Let's start here. Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. Now, why is he starting with let not your heart be troubled? Because we're carrying forward from chapter 13. I mean, he didn't do this in chapters. And he was telling them that he was going to be delivered up and crucified and all of that. So he says, look, don't let your heart be troubled. He's saying, believe in God, believe in me. Don't let this shake your faith, because it's to be. You know, the Father has willed this to happen. I'm doing it in obedience to my Father, and it's okay. And so he says, in my Father's house are many mansions, or places, provision. If it were not so, I would have told you, I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, and where I am, there you may be also. And then he gives a little hint here, and where I go, you know. And the way, you know. Now, we think of him going to the Father, going to the third heaven, to the throne. He says, and I'm going to go there, and I'm going to prepare a place for you there. And I wonder, is that really what he means? Because he says, I'm going to go there and prepare a place for you. And this word place is not necessarily a location, as it is that he's preparing for them. He's gathering provision for them. He's making resources available to him. I'm struggling for a way to put that. And they struggled for how to really translate that word. But he's saying that I'm leaving, but I'm coming again. And then again, we relate that, don't we, to his second coming. And that's true. But in the Bible, there's a lot of duality, okay? So when he says to them, he's going to say to them here later, he said, it's good that I go. Why is it good that he goes? Because he's going to go, and then he's going to send his Spirit. And so that's why he's saying, where I go, you know. And the way, you know. Why? Because they knew him. Thomas said to him, Lord, we don't know where you're going. How can we know the way? And Yeshua answered him plainly and said, well, I am the way. That's where I am going, to where I reside, and I'm going to go there and prepare for you to have me come and reside. In my Father's house are many mansions, are many places. What are those places? You and me. He says, I'm going to go and I'm going to prepare those places. I'm going to come and I'm going to live. It's good that I go. And where I'm going, you know. Why? Because you know me. I'm the way. I'm the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And he's saying, you know, if you'd known me, you would have known the Father also. And now you do know him, because you've seen me, and because you've seen me, you've seen him. Philip said, well, show us the Father, it's sufficient. He said, well, Philip, have I been with you so long and yet you've not known me? I just said to you that if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. You've seen the Father, right? He who has seen me has seen the Father. So how can you say, show us the Father? Do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father in me? The words that I speak to you, I don't speak on my own authority, but the Father who dwells in me does the works. Believe me that I am in the Father and the Father in me, or else believe me for the sake of the works themselves. See, if you can't believe that, if you can't see that, at least acknowledge the works. At least acknowledge the miracles. At least acknowledge the work that the Father has done through me. You won't find in this Bible a more rich section. I mean, there's a lot of rich sections in the Bible, but you won't find a more rich section than John 13, 14, 15, and 16, and 17. I mean, I'm going to walk through this. We're going to walk through this, but there's no way we're covering this. And I may just very well revert back, later. But that's what we're doing today. Okay, he says, most assuredly, I say to you, he who believes in me, the works that I do, he will do also, and greater than these will he do, because I go to the Father. Why? Because when he goes to the Father, he's going to send his Spirit, and of course, the same works that he did, he's going to continue to do in those in whom he dwells and in whom and those that will follow that leading and that guidance. So he says, whatever you ask in my name, that I will do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son. What does that mean? It means that as we follow that the Spirit, that Christ goes and he comes and he lives in us through his Spirit, and when we follow that Spirit, are we glorifying ourselves? No. Because without that Spirit, we would have never done those things. Right? We are in our flesh, and apart from that Spirit, we are enmity against God. Okay, so when those things happen, they glorify the Son. Because it's the Son in us that's accomplishing them. And as the Son is glorified therein, the Father is glorified. He says, if you ask anything in my name, I'll do it. And here is sort of the test, if you will. It's the way that we know, if you love me, keep my commandments. If you love me, keep my commandments. If you respect me, if you are following me, if you are cognizant of that Spirit that is in you and are subjecting yourself to it, you are expressing love towards me when you follow it, when you submit yourself and subject yourself to it. And that involves and is very much all about, you know, obedience and keeping his commandments. And he says, this is what I'll do. He says, I will pray the Father, and he'll give you another helper, that it may abide with you forever. And who is it? What is it? It is the Spirit of truth. How does Yeshua describe himself? I am the way, the truth, and the light. Right? So, that Spirit, the Spirit of Yeshua, whom the world cannot receive because it neither sees it or knows it, but you know it, for he dwells with you and will be in you. So they already knew this Spirit because they had been dwelling with that Spirit. They'd been walking with him and talking with him and being trained by him and being taught by him. He says, the world can't receive it because they reject him. But you know, because he dwells with you and in you. He says, I won't leave you orphans. I'm leaving. But he says, I'm coming back to you. I'm coming to you. He says, a little while longer the world will see me no more, but you will. And because I live, you will live also. Back to what we did on Passover evening. We took of the bread, we took of the wine, which represented his blood and his body and our desire to have him come and live in us. He says, because I live, you'll live also. Because of my resurrection and because me going back to the Father, I'm going to be able to send my Spirit. And because I live, you will live also. Without his Spirit in us, we're dead. With his Spirit in us, we have eternal life. He who has my commandments and keeps them, it is he who loves me. And he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him and manifest myself to him. Now Judas, not Iscariot, interesting that they put that in there, not Iscariot. Iscariot had already left, but they wanted to make sure, I guess. He said to him, Lord, how is it that you will manifest yourself to us and not to the world? They were trying to wrap their minds around this. This is a spiritual thing. And he answered him and says, if anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. Now that's interesting, see, because Yeshua and the Father in some way shared the same spirit. He says, we will come and make our home with him. He who does not love me does not keep my words, and the word which you hear is not mine, but my Father's who sent me. These things I have spoken to you while being present with you. But the Helper, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach all things and bring to your remembrance all things that I said to you. That tells us how that Spirit in us works. He doesn't take over us. He doesn't, you know, beat us over the head. We're not robots. But he brings to remembrance things and he guides us. He says, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. He's reemphasizing, yeah, I'm going away, but these are all the things that I'm going to do, so don't be troubled. You've heard me say to you, I'm going away and coming back to you. If you love me, you would rejoice because I said I'm going to the Father. For my Father is greater than I. And now I have told you before it comes, that when it does come to pass, that you may believe. I will no longer talk much with you, for the world ruler of this world is coming, and he has nothing in me. But that the world may know that I love the Father, and as the Father gave me commandments, so I do. Arise, let us go from here. Now you probably noticed in this chapter, as we go down here, we had Judas asking questions. We had Philip asking questions. Thomas asking questions. This was after sup had ended. He had given them the symbols of the blood and the wine. He had washed their feet. And now they were sitting around the table, if you can imagine, just discussing these things. And now we come to the end of chapter 14. He says, arise, let us go from here. And I wondered about that, and I kind of looked up a few commentaries. And I don't know, I didn't get really settled as to whether they went to another place or whether they just decided to, I don't know, whether they left the upper room and they maybe went out into the garden or whatever. But we see a little bit of a change between 14 and now 15 and 16. There isn't this interaction anymore. As we go to 15, we see that Yeshua is really just kind of more or less just teaching, right? So let's move to 15. So now he goes in, he says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that bears fruit, he prunes that it may bear more fruit. And you are already clean because of the word which I have spoken to you. Now that's interesting. We talked about that Passover night, that when he went to wash their feet, he told them, you know, after they had taken of the blood and the wine, that the bread and the wine, that they were already clean, but they needed just to wash their feet. And here he's saying the same thing, and he's giving this analogy about producing fruit, and he says that in order for you to do that, we have to do what he says in verse 4. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. He says, I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit. For without me you can do nothing. It's a very, very good analogy. I mean, we have to be attached. We have to be connected. We have to be tapped in to His Spirit in order to be able to produce any fruit. And if we're out here as a branch trying to produce fruit, trying to do something spiritual, to try to, you know, even keep the commandments, whatever, We aren't able to do that apart from the power, apart from the infusion of His Spirit from the vine, from the roots. If you take a branch off of any tree and break it off, you don't even have to break it off from the tree. Just take the bark around a branch. A lot of times that's enough because some of the nutrients and things come up through the bark. You only have to just score it. Just cut it off from the tree. As far as the nutrients getting there, you don't even have to cut it all the way off and it will die. It will stop producing fruit. And what do we do with a tree with vines that stop producing? We go out there and we prune. And that's what he says. He says, if anyone does not abide in me, he is cast out as a branch and is withered. And they gather them and they throw them into the fire and they're burned. But if you abide in me and my words abide in you, you will ask what you desire and it shall be done for you. Why is that? Is that a golden ticket for, you know, the genie in the sky that you can just ask whatever you want and it'll be given? No. What it means is, if you are attached to the vine, if you are being led and strengthened and changed by that which is coming up through the vine, it will change what you desire. And so as you are attached to that vine, and as that is flowing through you, that Spirit will bring to remembrance things that are holy and just and good and right, and they will become your desires. And then whatever you ask, he says, in my name, it will be given to you. And through this, he says, by this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit. So you will be my disciples. He says, as the Father loved me, I have also loved you. He said, abide in that love. That abide is just such a great word, right? It's just to soak in, to be in, to have that just be your the essence of how you live, right? These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you, and that your joy may be full. And this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. And he said, greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. And you are my friends if you do whatever I command you. And what a great passage this is. He's telling them, listen, what I'm about to go do is an example of the greatest love there is. I'm going to lay down my life for you. You are my friends. He says, no longer do I call you servant. Now, they were still servants. Christ is always going to be Lord. But you know, a servant, a master, just tells the servant what to do and he does it. He doesn't tell him why. He doesn't give him any, you know, he's not brought into the inner workings of what's going on. He's just do what you're told. And he says, that's no longer. The servant doesn't know what his master's doing, but I have now called you friends. For all things I heard from my Father, I have made known to you. When he comes into us, that's part of that indwelling of the Spirit, is not just to guide us in the things that we want to do, but to change our desires so that our desires are motivations, our goals are in line with the goals of the Son and the goals of the Father. And so in that way, we're not servants, even though we are subject to Him. There's a different relationship there where we get on the same page. And that's why He said, you know, anything that you pray to the Father, you know, through me, through responding to that service, to that Spirit, I'm going to do it, right? Because we're on the same page. He said, a servant does not know what his master is doing, but I've called you friends, for all things that I heard from my Father, I've made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give you. And these things I command you, that you love one another. You love one another. He says, if the world hates you, know that it hated me before it hated you. Oh boy. They're going to see that. Right? Later on, that very day. He says, if you were of the world would love its own. Yet because you're not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Because a servant is not greater than his master, and if they persecuted me, they're going to persecute you. If they kept my word, they're going to keep yours also. Guys, we have to understand what Yeshua is saying to us there. Because it's real. It's reality. You know, in the end of this age where we are, there is a lot of enmity against the teachings of Yeshua. And when you come against that, the world hates you. And I want you to understand something. The world didn't hate Yeshua himself. You know, Yeshua was a very likable man. He knew intimately how to relate to people. He created them. He could dine with tax collectors, and he could dine with anybody that wanted to dine with him. He was very likable, lovable person. What was the problem? It wasn't him that they hated. It was his message. They didn't like his message. Because what he came and said was, what you believe is wrong. In many cases, that's what he was telling the Sadducees and the Pharisees and everything. She says, no, it's not right. That's not what that means. It means more than that. It means sometimes less than that. It means, you know, they didn't like his message. And they killed him for it. They killed him for it. They didn't kill him because he was, you know, a rotten person. And so you have to understand that. That at some point in time, if it comes down to whether people like or dislike you for what we believe, you don't take it personally. I never take it personally. Because it's not me that necessarily they're rejecting. They're rejecting the message, just like they did with Yeshua. Verse 21, but all these things they will do to you for my name's sake, because they do not know him who sent me. If I had not come and spoken to them, they would have no sin, but now they have no excuse for their sin. And he who hates me hates my Father also. If I had done among them the works which no one else did, they would have no sin. But now they have seen and also hated both me and my Father. Because of the message. But this happened that the word might be fulfilled which is written in their law, they hated me without a cause. But when the Helper comes, whom I shall send to you from the Father, the Spirit of truth who proceeds from the Father, he will testify of me. It will testify of me. And you will also bear witness, because you have been with me from the beginning. These things I have spoken to you, that you should not be made to stumble. Because, why? Because, listen, they're not going to like, if you're promoting my message, they're not going to like you any more than they liked me, right? Because they don't like the message. So they're going to put you out of the synagogues. Verse 2. Yes, the time is coming that whoever kills you will think he offers God service. When they attack for the beliefs of the teachings of Yeshua, they're not attacking you. And these things they will do to you because they have not known the Father nor me. But these things I have told you, that when the time comes you may remember that I told you of them. And these things I did not say to you at the beginning because I was with you. You know, I didn't need to bolster you up this way because I was here, right? But now I'm going away, and I'm going to him who sent me, verse 5, and none of you ask me, where are you going? But because I've said these things to you, sorrow has filled your heart. He says, nevertheless, I tell you the truth, it is to your advantage that I go away. For if I don't go away, I can't send the Helper to you. I have to go away. I have to shed this physical body so I can return to the Spirit, so that I can share my Spirit back to you. I can't do it in the form that I'm in right now. It's to your advantage that I go. And when it has come, it will convict the world of sin and of righteousness and of judgment, of sin, because they do not believe in me. Of righteousness, because I go to my Father and you see me no more. of judgment, because the ruler of this world is judged. He says, I still have many things to say to you, but you can't bear them now. However, and this is cool. He goes, look, you don't have the Spirit in you yet. I got a lot more to teach you. Get that? There's a lot more to teach you. How am I going to teach it to you? You can't bear it now. You can't bear it in the physical without my Spirit. But you will. When the Spirit of truth has come, He will guide you into all truth. And it will speak on His own, but whatever it hears, He will speak, and it will tell you things to come. It will glorify me, for He will take of what is mine and declare it to you. Praise God. That is why I always continue to come back and say, the things of the Spirit cannot be understood apart from the Spirit. And so when you are able to understand some of these things, be joyous in yourself. That is direct acknowledgement that the Spirit of God resides in you. He says, all things that the Father has are mine. Therefore I said that He will take of mine and declare it to you. He said, just a little while you won't see me. And again for a little while, and you will see me, because I go to the Father. What's he talking about? A little while you'll not see me. Okay, here in a little bit, I'm going to die. You're not going to see me. And then you're going to count to the day of Pentecost, and you're going to see me again. Well, they'll see him again once he's resurrected. But I believe he's talking about something much deeper. That he's going to come and he's going to reside in them. And they're going to be able, when he comes and resides in them, they're going to be able to see. All of these things that he's saying to them that they don't understand the context of, and they don't understand exactly what was he talking about. When the Holy Spirit comes into them on the day of Pentecost, they're going to be able to see. Some of the disciples said among themselves, what is this that he says, a little while you'll not see me, and again a little while and you will see me because I go to the Father? And what is this that he says, a little while? We don't know what he's saying. We don't get it. So, you know, Yeshua realized that. He said to them, are you inquiring among yourselves about what I said, a little while and you'll not see me, and again in a little while you won't see me? Most assuredly, and whenever you hear that, listen up. A lot of times in other translations it says verily, verily, but most assuredly I say to you that you will weep and lament, but the world will rejoice. You will be sorrowful, but your sorrow will be turned into joy. A woman, when she is in labor, has sorrow because her hour has come. But as soon as she has given birth to the child, she no longer remembers the anguish for joy that a human being has been born into the world. It's a great analogy. Therefore, you now have sorrow, but I will see you again, and your heart will rejoice, and your joy no one will take from you. Do we realize what that means? Your joy no one will take from you. You ever wondered how Paul was so content to be in prison? How all of these things happened to these disciples, and yet they kept their joy? See, there's a difference between being happy or having fun and having joy. See, joy, nobody can take from you. It's there all the time. Right? And that's what he's talking about. And in that day you'll ask me nothing. Most assuredly I say to you, whatever you ask the Father in my name, he will give you. Until now you've asked nothing in my name, but ask and you will receive, and your joy may be full. These things I have spoken to you in figurative language, but the time is coming when I will no longer speak to you in figurative language, but I will tell you plainly about the Father. How will that happen? Through His Spirit. In that day you will ask in my name, and I do not say to you that I shall pray to the Father for you, for the Father himself loves you because you have loved me and have believed that I came forth from God. I came forth from the Father and have come into the world. Again, I leave the world and I go to the Father. His disciples said to him, "See, now you're speaking plainly and using no figure of speech. Now we are sure that you know all things and have no need that anyone should question you. By this we believe that you came forth from God." And he answered them and says, "Do you now believe?" Really? Because we're going to find out. It's going to get tough. "Indeed, the hour is coming, yes, and has now come, that you will be scattered, each to his own, and will leave me alone. And yet I'm not alone, because the Father's with me. These things I have spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer. He says, I have overcome the world." Chapter 17 goes into that prayer that we read night before, you know, Passover evening. So, there's a lot here in these three chapters. And I hope that has spurred you on to think about some things. So let's circle up and visit about a lot of this, okay?